stvara usupieri supiak nioska.
You're tuned to 3CR 855 AM, 3CR digital and streaming at 3cr.org.au. Today, the recordings we're bringing you is the first of a two-part special featuring the speeches from the Climate Crisis and War Rally held on Saturday 21st of September 2019 in Federation Square on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong. The rally was organised by the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network to mark the UN International Day of Peace with a call for no Australian support for US wars and highlighting the links between the military-industrial complex and the climate crisis. First up, Shirley Winton from the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network, followed by Scott Collum, member of the Electrical Trades Union and the Climate Activist Network, then Jenny Grounds from the Medical Association for Prevention of War and Australian War Powers Reform. After that, we'll hear from David McElwain, independent journalist in Iran and the Middle East, followed by Jacob Greck from 3CR's A Friday Rave. The MC is Kevin Bracken from the Maritime Union of Australia.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a beautiful day in Melbourne, and today, the 21st of September, has been declared the International Day of Peace by the United Nations. And it's a day where governments and people draw their attention to a specific thing. And who doesn't want peace? Unfortunately, our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, is dagging around Donald Trump for his accolades for sending our troops over to Iran. For no reason at all, we don't have any Australian flag ships in the Persian Gulf, and it's totally illegal for us to send our Navy over there. So on this International Day of Peace, we've got a number of speakers here, and the first one's from the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network, Shirley Winton. And we'll put your hands together for Shirley. She's not only a member of ICPAN, but also the Spirit of Eureka, and a great social activist in the western suburbs.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming on a sunny day. About an hour ago, we were wondering where we would end up because it was pouring rain. So firstly, we acknowledge that this meeting is being held on the solemn lands of the First Nations people, the Wurundjeri people, who have never ceded their sovereignty. We pay our respects to First Peoples culture, elders, warriors, past and present and future, and we support their struggles for self-determination and sovereignty. The Independent and Peaceful Australian Network welcomes you all today to this rally. This year's United Nations International Day of Peace theme is Climate Action for Peace, and very timely too. It is part of the worldwide actions against two major threats facing the world today: wars of aggression and climate change. The world today is torn by devastating wars of aggression and climate crisis. So how do we here in Australia contribute to the global peace and justice and be part of the worldwide people's movement to put an end to all wars of aggression? We in IPAN call for an independent foreign policy. That is all. That will be our contribution to promoting peace and sovereignty of countries, and its independence from all big powers. Today, Australia is deeply enmeshed in US war machine and its military. Our two main political parties are subservient to US foreign policies and act like puppets of the US. They obediently answer every call the US is making, support its global military agendas. They take orders from the world's most ruthless aggressor and warmonger that tramples on human rights of people across the world and sovereignties of countries. And this is no better exemplified than today or in the last few days, where our Prime Minister has been kowtowing to the greatest human rights abuser, and that's Donald Trump. This is no more obvious than Morrison's swimming performance before him. And as we hold this rally, Morrison is taking his orders from the US President. Morrison has committed Australia to, in his words, to 100 years, unquote, of more subservience and servitude to the US. He has committed Australia's subservience even more deeply to the US, and some would call it brown-nosing more deeply. This means even more US military and intelligence bases in Australia and more US Marines here. It means hosting US mid-range nuclear missiles and new naval ports and facilities for the giant US nuclear warships and Air Force carriers. It means committing Australian forces to US wars without even the formality of a debate in Parliament or any public discussion. Australia is being turned into a major regional US launching pad from which the US can launch its wars against the people of Asia Pacific and the Indian Ocean region. And it's not only against the people of this region. The US intelligence and military bases Pine Gap and Alice Springs in Northwest Cape are used for waging its wars in the Middle East. And other speakers will talk about this later. Australia's foreign policy are indistinguishable from the US foreign policies, and they are written in Washington and the Pentagon. Australia does not have its own independent foreign policies that promote peace and respect the sovereignty of other countries. Instead, we are an appendage to US interests. Our military and defence are mainly serve the US, not the interests of Australian people and our sovereignty, our peace and security. And in reality, the only threat to Australia's peace and security is the US-Australian military alliance, making ourselves a target if war between US and China breaks out. Australia has been accurately described as the 51st state of the US or its deputy sheriff. In the past 60 years, successive Australian governments have unquestioningly supported and backed every US war. And we've got Iraq, Syria, and now Iran. We've supported US invasions, political and military interferences, and regime changes across the world. And we're assisting the US military operations against the people in the Philippines now. In the UN, Australia rubber stamps every US foreign policy to legitimize US maneuvers for regime changes, invasions, and wars of aggression. And more than ever, our society is now militarized. Australia's defense budget of $200 billion over the next 4 to 5 years is primarily to prop up our integration and interoperability with the US global military agendas and policies, and not for sovereign self-defense. That's billions of dollars of people's taxes being taken away from public health, education, from increasing the NewSat allowance and increasing disability payments to simply fund US wars and the world's biggest war corporations. Our schools, our universities and manufacturing industries are more than ever being tightened and integrated into US military. The glorification and acceptance of imperialist wars becomes mainstream. And this is what the US-Australia military alliance is all about. It has nothing to do with protecting or defending Australia from invasions and attacks. It's quite the opposite. It's the US-Australia military alliance that is the main threat to Australia's people, peace and security. And finally, who is profiting from the world being in a permanent state of wars and fueling climate crisis? None other than the oil and gas fossil fuel corporations whose greed for profit starts wars, and the military corporations who profit from expanding the world's weapons markets. And more often than not, the fossil fuel and weapons corporations are deeply linked with each other. So how can we assist in building a movement against wars and for peace? Australian people's contribution to ending the imperialist wars is to build a broad people's movement that unites many strands of peace, anti-war and anti-imperialist struggles. To end the US-Australia military alliance, remove the US bases and troops, and promote an independent and peaceful foreign policy and independence from all big powers. And this will be our meaningful contribution to global peace and justice. And we hope that you do join us. We hope that you join the movement that's growing against war and for peace. And thank you for coming again.
Thanks very much, Shirley. And it's not only radical people who recognise this too. Malcolm Fraser, before he died, said that our military alliance with the US is making it more dangerous from Australia, not safer. And our next speaker, and this is the United Nations Day of Peace, but it's also got the focus on climate change this year and the relationship. If we need to have a harmonious world, then we need to be living with energy that is sustainable and the world is not destroying the earth but making it better. So our next speaker is Scott Collum from the Young Unionists for Network for Climate Action. So put your hands together for Scott. It's great to see young people here stepping up to the mark.
Hello, comrades. So my name is Scott and I'm a proud and active member of the Electrical Trade Union. And I want to start by acknowledging that we are in a climate crisis. And if unprecedented action doesn't start soon, we will be pushed towards a sixth mass extinction far sooner than ever before. Our government, despite this fact, is doing absolutely nothing. They'd rather put elitists and companies' profits before humanity's very survival, and it is an utter disgrace. We are not prepared for what we are going to face. We will face floods, extreme weather, famine, mass migration, and we can already see it with the bushfires that are happening in September. That has never happened in our history, and Queensland and New South Wales are already feeling the burn. It is happening right in front of us, and it's time for us to do something about it. Once the climate emergency hits us, civilization will break down, and wars will be waged as a result to control resources, to control water, to control food. And we need to ask ourselves, who will win that war? Will it be the rich or will it be the poor? Will it be those in power or the working class? This is what our future holds if someone doesn't act now and our government is doing nothing. They are not listening to us. It's already happening in Bangladesh. Due to the rising sea levels, people cannot produce food and they need to migrate to survive. Their neighbouring country, India, is going to run out of water by 2020 in their impoverished cities. What do you think they're doing in Bangladesh? They've built what I would like to call a wall of bloody death. Anyone that tries to flood from Bangladesh to India is either shot for jumping the wall or deported back to inhumane conditions. This is happening today. Imagine what happens when we start running out of water worldwide. It is absolutely disgusting because it is preventable if we act now. Conventional approaches are not working, I'm sad to say. You can try lobbying, you can try petitions, you can try voting, but it is getting us absolutely nowhere. We need to be willing to do something more. We need to be willing to take action for a long period of time. It is our duty as people on this planet, it is our duty as citizens of Australia to fight for the future of our future generations, to fight for the future of planet Earth. Now, there is one mob that is already currently doing that, and that is Extinction Rebellion. They understand what we are facing. They understand that people need to stand up and actually say something and have their voices heard because our government is doing nothing. And on October the 7th, we are doing a week of rebellion. A 1 week is all it's going to take for them to listen to us. I encourage each and every person here to take part in that. They are peaceful. They want action and they want to save our bloody planet. It's not that hard, so let's get it done. I'll see you all there, comrades.
Good on you, Scott. And who was it that said, evil prevails because good men do nothing? So it's good to see young people like Scott stepping up to the mark and making a difference in the world. Now, the US after Vietnam said they'll never lose another war because of television. And we've been at war now in Afghanistan for 18 years. We haven't seen one dead child or dead body or anyone there. They have precision bombs that only kill terrorists, of course. And we know how much rubbish that is. Just recently, yesterday, 20 people were killed, 20 workers picking pine nuts on a farm. Were hit by a drone missile by the US. 150 people, there were 20 of them killed. And they're still, that's still coming out too. And the people who have to deal with these problems are the doctors. And our next speaker is a doctor, Jenny Grounds, from the Medical Association for Prevention of War. Put your hands together for Jenny.
Thank you. I joined my organisation, Medical Association for Prevention of War, after the proposed invasion of Iraq, because we knew, as so many Australians knew, that this was going to be a disaster which would lead to millions and millions of deaths and injuries that we would be in no position to do anything about. And like so many things in this world, we're just marching towards other wars at the moment, and we're marching towards a world ruined by ignored global warming. We do it at our own peril. And like Scott said, it'll be the poor people that suffer. Nuclear weapons, one of the things that we've campaigned on, and we started ICANN, the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons here in Melbourne, 12 or 13 years ago. And in 2017, after a lot of very hard work and campaigning internationally, we got a treaty. 127 countries endorsed a treaty at the UN to abolish nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons and climate change represent two major existential threats to human beings and to the planet. Ironically, they both do it through changing the planet, changing the climate, so that there'll be food insecurity and water insecurity, and that will lead to millions of displaced people. But nukes, of which there are at least 17,000 on the planet at the moment, and many of those on ready alert, will do it through just a small exchange in a nuclear war. Like, for example, India and Pakistan. Not an unimaginable thing that those two countries might end up firing nuclear weapons at each other at the moment. A small exchange of nuclear weapons would lead to so much dust and particulate matter in the atmosphere, not to say all the people who would die of terrible burns and radiation in where the nukes were used, but the whole world would be affected by the dust in the atmosphere that would cause a nuclear winter. And recent studies using good mathematical modelling show that it will be affecting so much, it will cause so much crop failure through temperature reductions and loss of sunshine, that 2 billion people, that's more than a quarter of the current population of the world, will be at risk of starvation. And imagine the calamity that that will cause and the number of people who will be trying to get to places where they can survive. It'll make the current refugee crisis look like a picnic in the park. There is already evidence that climate change has induced conflict, and as Scott has said too, there's going to be a lot more induced by all these people who are affected. And of course, the Pacific Island nations have been affected both by nuclear testing so callously performed in their homelands, on their islands, making them uninhabitable. And now they are the first to be affected by rising sea levels caused by climate change. And what a disgrace that our government could not bring themselves to sign their declaration for a climate emergency, to do something about climate change to prevent their countries being overwhelmed by rising sea levels. Now, every year, this world spends $1.7 trillion on the military, on what they call defence, which is really not defence, but aggression. And that industry spends $1.7 trillion around the world. A quarter of that could achieve the Sustainable Development Goals, which are aimed at improving health, welfare, education and poverty, relieving poverty, giving water and food security to countries and people all around the world. A quarter of that money would achieve that. How can we go on spending all that money, allowing our governments to encourage that sort of spending, when so much less could achieve so much more? $105 billion per year on just maintaining nuclear weapons, on producing new ones and maintaining the ones we've got, on keeping them on ready alert. $105 billion. So some of the things that we want to do as an organisation with other peace groups is to move that money away from weapons. And we're looking at doing that through encouraging people to divest from fossil fuels, yes. Encourage fossil fuel divestment, but also divest from nuclear weapons. Divest from all weapons, but particularly nuclear weapons. So we've started a campaign called Quit Nukes, which is going to urge superannuation funds initially in Australia to take their money out of any companies that are involved in producing and transporting and facilitating the use of nuclear weapons. We based that on a wonderful book called Don't Bank on the Bomb, produced by ICANN, and it's a very good listing of all the companies involved in nuclear weapons. We want to counter militarism in all its forms. As Shirley said, we are a very militaristic society and we are following the US in every way like that. So we have a campaign to stop weapons companies being able to worm their way into places like the Australian War Memorial, which gets a lot of funding these days from weapons companies, the very companies that cause the death and suffering of people through wars. And Brendan Nelson says, well, they should. They caused the problem in the first place. They should pay penance. We don't think it's appropriate for that sort of company to be funding what should be a very solemn place that is looking for peace, as all veterans want us to do. We also want Australia not to get involved in wars at the drop of a hat, at the call of a US president. And we call for war powers reform, which means that we call for laws which change the situation so that all of Parliament must agree, must discuss a decision to go to war unless it is an immediate threat to the Australian people on the Australian land. So that when Iraq was proposed to be invaded and Afghanistan, the whole of government would have to, the whole of our government, our parliament, our federal parliament would have to discuss that decision and come to consensus about whether it was worthwhile for Australia to be there, instead of it being a captain's pick. And we also call for the declaration of a climate emergency here and now. We have an emergency on our hands, and we call for Australia too to sign the Nuclear Weapons Treaty, which will come into force within the next year or two when 50 countries have signed and ratified it. We call on Australia to sign that treaty instead of what they have done to date, which is to undermine the treaty all along the way. We had a commitment from Labor to sign the treaty if they came into government. Unfortunately, they did not. But we must keep pursuing Australia to sign the treaty. It is not in conflict with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, to which we're already a signatory. It, in fact, builds on that and facilitates the abolition of nuclear weapons. It's still a long process, but once a weapon has a treaty against it, like biological, chemical weapons and landmines, there is a stigma, and countries that don't sign the treaty will still stop using and producing those weapons. So it has an effect. Even if the countries that have nuclear weapons do not sign this treaty, the impact of it being of nuclear weapons being outlawed is huge on what they will and won't do in the future. And it's the only way to go with nuclear weapons. So please, everybody, we have some postcards here if you want to sign them about the sponsoring of the War Memorial by weapons companies. It's a small part, but it's a very important part of the way we are developing a military-industrial complex in Australia to rival anything else on the planet apart from the US. And we don't want that to happen. We've got weapons companies in our schools sponsoring students and setting up programs. And it's a very insidious way to make war normal, to be constantly at war or thinking about war as an honourable thing to be involved with. It is not. So as medical professionals, again, we call on Australian government to declare a climate emergency and to sign the Nuclear Weapons Treaty. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Jenny. And Jenny touched on some an issue that was very important when we do go to war, and that's a deplorable state of mass media in this country. The mass media is that tightly controlled, you don't get any other opinion except the crap that gets sent out from Wall Street. And without any investigation, they just repeat it ad verbum.
You're tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m. We're bringing you speeches from the Climate Crisis and War Rally from 21st of September 2019. We heard there from Shirley Winton, Scott Collum and Jenny Grounds. And up next, we've got David McElwain, followed by Jacob Greck.
So our next speaker, I'm very pleased to introduce our next speaker, David McElwain. He's a journalist, an investigative journalist, who's been to Iran three times, also been to Syria and Yemen. So put your hands together for David McElwain.
Hard to know where to begin with the situation with Iran at the moment. We are almost sleepwalking into a war against Iran because of decisions taken by the government without really any understanding of the issues, or and with no public input, no parliamentary input. When Scott Morrison and Maurice Payne signed up to this coalition supposedly to protect shipping in the Straits of Hormuz, where the oil comes through to Australia, they did so on the basis that they were protecting shipping that was endangered by attacks from Iran. And the Labour Party, the opposition, agreed to this deployment on the basis that it was just for security and protecting shipping, when in fact there was no threat to shipping from Iran. The threat to shipping was concocted by a number of things that happened. The bomb missile attack on two tankers in July, and the seizing of an Iranian tanker of oil going to Syria, which was followed by Iran detaining a tanker, a British tanker. These things were... I'm a conspiracy analyst, basically. I follow all sorts of media, and particularly alternative media, foreign media, Russian media, who have quite a different take on many of these issues, and Iranian media. Iranian Press TV is an English language service which was recently banned from the UK for putting forward an alternative point of view. So what's happened? We went into this supposed exercise to protect shipping in the Persian Gulf unnecessarily, which was inevitably was opposed by Iran. They were very upset that we had joined it because, unlike the UK and the US, we still have an embassy in Tehran, which could be an intermediary in disputes, and Iran saw us as being fairly impartial. And now we've taken a side with the US while portraying it as just a peaceful act. We weren't to know at the time. Perhaps we warned at the time that this was an act of aggression against Iran. But now look at what's happened following the strike on the Saudi oil refinery, which was carried out by the Yemeni resistance army, the Houthis, and is blamed on Iran, has created an enormous crisis and calls for an attack on Iran against it, Iran being blamed for it quite wrongly. And now suddenly here Scott Morrison is in Washington alongside Donald Trump, who this morning even declared that we had to do something and perhaps we could use a nuclear weapon against Iran, or but then perhaps not. And Scott Morrison is standing alongside and says, well, we'll do whatever you say, basically. We've got ourselves in this position. So I think the important thing to realise about the nuclear issue with Iran is that in as long ago as 2003, 17 US intelligence agencies concluded that Iran had abandoned any intent to build a nuclear weapon. It did some investigations before that in the 90s, but then it abandoned it. And since then, it hasn't pursued it. It's got defensive missiles all along the Persian Gulf, which are targeting Israel, Saudi, UAE interests, American interests, and America is very frightened of those being used. We should all be frightened. And so, but Iran, it had a nuclear research reactor. It produced enriched uranium for that reactor. It was always maintained, Israel maintained, that Iran had secret works where it was producing a nuclear bomb and that it could produce one nuclear bomb and all the time. So finally we had an agreement that we came to under Obama to remove really all the remains of Iran's nuclear power program in return for the lifting of sanctions against Iran. And the sanctions have been extremely severe on Iran's economy. But following that agreement, very little happened. The sanctions weren't lifted. European countries said that they would not keep with the US sanctions, but they failed to do so because they're afraid of America's response. And so now we're in a situation where Trump's saying we impose more sanctions. These are the worst sanctions we ever have imposed on a country, against the banks, and now the complete strangulation of Iran's economy by preventing its oil exports. And this, our maritime security operation in the Persian Gulf pretends to be protecting shipping from Iranian attack, but it is, in fact, it's a blockade, or can be used as a blockade, against Iranian oil exports. But Iran has partners. It has the strong and powerful partners, and particularly Russia and China. And China gets oil through the Iranian oil through the Straits of Hormuz. China doesn't respect US sanctions against buying Iranian oil. Russia does a lot of trade with Iran and has been developing links with Iran because of the war in Syria, where Iran is a partner with Russia and the Syrian government. And the nuclear issue is highlighted really by the fact that now that Donald Trump threatens to use a nuclear weapon against Iran, because the only reason that Iran might want to have nuclear weapons is as a defensive measure. Iran is accused all the time of wanting to wipe Israel off the map with a nuclear weapon, but there's never any chance that Iran could do that, so because were it to use such a thing, Iran would be obliterated by Israel has 200 nuclear weapons, most of which are probably aimed at Iran. So Iran could only ever have a nuclear weapon, even if it had developed one, as a self-defensive measure. But in fact, Iran signed up to the international move for the banning of nuclear weapons a few years ago. And the supreme leader, the Ayatollah, has issued a fatwa or whatever against the use of nuclear weapons. He says it's against Islamic values to do such a thing. Maybe it's not against the values of the evangelical and fundamentalist Christians in the United States, like Mike Pompeo, who apparently believes in the rapture. So where do we find ourselves with this latest attack from Yemen? Must be said that Yemen was responsible for flying these drones that hit the Saudi oil facility, and all sorts of very little evidence can be produced. They produced missiles yesterday in Saudi Arabia, claiming that these were Iranian missiles, but they couldn't possibly have come from Iran to strike at this refinery, because the US Fifth Fleet is there. There's all sorts of installations, there's anti-missile defences, all focused on Iran to the north. And they failed to stop all these missiles. So clearly they came from the south. But the fact is, the Saudis have been waging a war against Yemen, against the resistance in Yemen, and for 4.5 years, backed by the US and the UK and France, who all supply them with weapons. And the Yemenis have had enough. And now they're striking back. And they say, we'll go on striking unless you stop bombarding and come to some agreement with us and stop attacking Yemen. Now, it's hard to understand really what goes on, because there's a lot of different forces in Yemen, but there's also there's a split between the south and the north of Yemen, and the south was traditionally supported by Britain, and the north was supported more by America and Saudi Arabia. The UAE is closely involved in Yemen and is supporting one group of separatists in the south. It's supposed to be in coalition with Saudi Arabia. It's a very complicated picture, but the British and the US particularly have sold weapons to Saudi Arabia and the UAE for years, and also assisting them with intelligence. And yeah, I could go on for hours, really. The main point I wanted to make was that Iran is under attack, basically. Iran has done nothing other than have a revolution back in 1979 against kicking out the US interests, the Shah and the oil companies. And 40 years on, America and Israel are still trying to get their hands on to change the regime in Iran. And that's what it comes down to. And we've sided with America. So.
Thanks very much, David. Our next speaker is on Australian militarism and WikiLeaks. And he's a person who actually worked with Julian Assange when he was in Melbourne. People don't know it, but in the 1990s, he was helping the Victoria Police catch a ring of pedophiles by underscoring their... by hacking into their emails. So I'd like to hand on to our next speaker, Jacob Gretsch. Put your hands together, please.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, comrade. I'd like to start by acknowledging that we're standing on Wurundjeri land, like has been acknowledged before us, of the people of the Kulin Nations, land that's never been ceded. And I'd like to start there because it's about the very essence of what Australia is. An occupying force on land that has never, not once, been ceded. And that's where Australian militarism starts. Well, I'm not going to labour that point. I've been asked to speak today about a few things, and the focus is on climate change. So, you know, we currently have troops. Put that away. We currently have troops in about a dozen countries around the world. You wouldn't know it, would you? How many of you knew that we have active fighting troops in 12 countries, in more than 12 countries around the world? Because some of them are regions. Big two, of course, are Iraq and Afghanistan. And I'm going to stay in Afghanistan just for a moment, because the other night, Thursday, our time, Wednesday, their time, a US drone killed 30 farmers in Afghanistan, injured 40 more. a US drone. Now, it's got nothing to do with Australia, you might say, because it wasn't us that killed them. We've killed other people in Afghanistan. But what happened is we had some Afghani farmers harvesting pine nuts, sitting down talking about the day's work and the security situation in their country, because unlike Australia, obviously, in Afghanistan, when people get together, what they talk about is the security situation in their country, when they were hit out of the blue by US drones. And when you think of drones, don't think about these cute little things with cameras on them that you see flying around the city. We're talking about drones that are bigger than a light aircraft that carry Hellfire missiles. Just saying drones, you think of like toy aeroplanes, but they're not. These are massive pieces of war machinery. Now, these 30, not these particular 30 or the 40 injured, but the people who were organising them, they've said they sent a letter 2 weeks before to the military governance of the prophet of the province, Nangarhar. And they did that to let the US military and let the Afghani military know that they were farmers and there were going to be a lot of people coming into the province for the harvest over the next 2 weeks. And they didn't want to be mistaken for insurgents. Now, people can say, if they weren't planning anything, if they're up to no good, why did they write a letter? Why did they try to say they weren't insurgents? Well, the answer to that is simple. Because the day before they wrote that letter, four brothers were killed, being accused of insurgency, who also weren't. So they said, we don't want to keep going on like this. We've got farmers coming in. Now, it wasn't Australians, but we were implicated. We are implicated by a number of means. First of all, our support of American troops there. Secondly, we work with them. We're seconded. Australian soldiers are seconded to the US military all the time. Hundreds of the moment of Australian soldiers are seconded to various branches of the US military. We don't know whether any of them were involved in that drone strike. What we do know is that drone strike was orchestrated from a joint Australian-US base in the centre of Australia, Pine Gap, which has been mentioned before. That is not conjecture anymore. We've known it for years. Now we can prove it. And we can prove it because of the work of whistleblowers, in this particular case, Edward Snowden, who's currently in exile in Russia. But I was asked to also talk about climate change today and the impacts of climate change. And how do we, you know, it's almost drawing a long bow to talk about the effects of climate change when you're talking about a drone killing 30 people in Afghanistan. Well, let me run this by you. First of all the chemicals, some depleted uranium, they're all environmentally destructive chemicals. But let's leave the weapons right aside for the moment. Those drones come from the United States. They didn't fly there. They were transported there in a Stratofortress B-52. That Stratofortress uses the same amount of fuel per hour that your average American driver uses in 7 years. And it's a 14 and a bit hour flight from the United States to Afghanistan in one of those things. That makes it 100 years. 100 years worth of the average driver's fuel. So we were talking about electric cars and moving to alternative means of transport. Bear that in mind. Just delivering the weapons from the United States to kill people in Iraq, in Afghanistan uses the same amount of fuel as 100 years of people driving cars in the United States. And then don't forget, they've got to fly the bomb, they've got to fly the plane back again. So that's 200. So that's just before we even look at the actual weapons themselves, the amount of resources that are going into the military. Years ago, in the 1980s, I was cleaning the brakes of my old bus with some hydrocarbons because I was helping an environmental organisation move their stuff to a forest blockade. But by the way, some people come up to me and gave me a hard time for cleaning my brakes with hydrocarbons. And a mate of mine, Bob, who's a professor of maths at Newcastle University, pointed out to me that if I had two spray cans, perpetual spray cans with my fingers on them for the rest of my life, and so did my partner, and so did each of our kids, for the rest of our lives, we would still use less hydrocarbons than they use to clean an F-18 Hornet every time it landed at Tyndall Air Base. So we were talking about climate change and use of environmentally destructive chemicals, ozone-depleting chemicals, greenhouse gas emissions. Let's recognise that the military is far and away the largest user of fossil fuels in the world and the largest producer of environmentally damaging chemicals. But anyway, that's just 200 years when you look at the return flight from Afghanistan to the United States. And you don't hear about it in the news. Why would you? It's an everyday occurrence. I'm talking about deaths that happened this week and earlier this month. But you can say the same about every month in Afghanistan and various other places around the world. The other way we're involved, of course, is in the provision of weapons. Australia's aiming to become a major arms exporter. That's already been touched on. But let me tell you that every F-35 anywhere in the world at the moment, regardless of which Air Force it's flying with, contains parts made in Australia. Every military around the world uses research that was done in Australia. Australian universities lead the world in military research. Just last week, there was a major arms fair in London called DESEI, D-S-E-I, where half a dozen different Australian universities had stalls advertising themselves to the biggest weapons manufacturers in the world to come and do your research here at Australian universities. RMIT, Melbourne University, Monash, Deakin, all of them are selling themselves to arms dealers where they could be using their engineering and their astrophysics and their chemistry and all the rest of it to be working out and working on research to try to reverse the destruction we've already created. But no, it's all about creating more. And we don't hear about it in the media. Well, we hear little bits in the media, but then what happens? A couple of months ago, we had a situation where another whistleblower, David McBride, formerly of the Australian Army, released information about Australian soldiers killing 14-year-old kid named Khan Mohammed while he was picking figs for his family breakfast. He released that information. He released information about Bismillah Azadi and his son, Sadiqullah Azadi, who was strafed by Australian soldiers as they lay in their bed. No contact with insurgents, not terrorists. People who were so poor that a 40-something-year-old bloke slept with his 10-year-old son in the same bed. And before they were even woken up, they were strafed by Australian bullets, by Australian soldiers. So much so that you see the photos, bullet holes all over the walls, all over the floor. And when David McBride released that information to the ABC, what was our government's response? To raid the ABC. This is what happens. Australia is at war, and every part of war includes a propaganda arm of the war at home. Ever since when Quintilius Fuspa in ancient Rome was writing diatribes about the Gauls in, 300 BC, ever since right up to Goebbels, the same thing is happening now. There is a war on the people at home, a war on journalists. This week, just God, and the head of, Home Affairs, made the admission that they haven't kept records of the warrants put out against journalists because to compile them all would take too many resources. Now, he's not talking about one, two or three here. He's telling us that the Home Affairs Department have got warrants to spy on journalists. spy on people like her, like me, like her. All right, this is what's happening in the propaganda arm. We are at war, and there is a war at home, and we're not hearing about it at the papers. I'm going to finish now, but I am going to talk about WikiLeaks. I am going to mention WikiLeaks, and I'm going to say that because not all Australians are warmongering bastards. There is still a part of us. There is still a part of us who have that rebellious spirit that the media tend to celebrate so much and the government's tried to stamp out as much as they can. And as Kevin mentioned, here in Melbourne, 13 years ago next month, actually, 13 years ago, an organisation was formed. A couple of organisations were formed. Well, ICANN was formed about a dozen years ago. And the year before that, WikiLeaks was formed. It was formed by a bloke who stood here in Fed Square with us at the big peace rallies we had against the Iraq war. Julian Assange. And he started it not to be a trickster, not to cause trouble, but because he said that if wars could be started by lies, peace could be started by the truth. And that's what he started, an organisation to release documents. And he released a lot of documents. And in particular released a document that he's wanted for in the United States that showed American soldiers killing innocent people, children, journalists, to first responders who came to look after them, who came to attend to their bleeding bodies in a back street in Baghdad. And that's what WikiLeaks was for, and that's why Julian is currently sitting in a terrorist cell in Belmarsh Prison. A bloke from Melbourne who was here at rallies like this and bigger and smaller, I've got to say, 13 years ago. And now he's in a Belmarsh prison and the Australian government's doing nothing about it. But it's no use calling on the Australian government. They're not going to do anything. So I've just got to close by saying what you could do on this and any other issue, climate change, militarism, mining, whatever, is learn the truth and speak the truth and tell people. Because it's only until we know the truth that we can change it. Go to WikiLeaks.org. It's a search engine. It's a website that was designed by the greatest web minds in the world, believe me. Put in the search. You've got a search engine. Put in whatever climate criminal you're looking at. Put in whatever politician you're looking at and find the dirt on them. And know the truth about what they're really saying. And that's all. Happy International Day of Peace, people.
You've been listening to the speeches from the Climate Crisis and War Rally held on 21st of September by the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network. We'll bring you the second half of the speeches from this rally at the same time next week. And to find out more about IPAN, you can go to their website, ipan.org.au. Thanks to the speakers we heard from today, Shirley Winton, Scott Collum, Jenny Grounds, David McElwain, Jacob Greck, and MC Kevin Bracken. And the music heard on today's show was Biak Mios Karu by the Black Sisters from the album Peace, Love, Merdeka. Oh, yeah.